Today's episode was brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. Hey, this is an ad that I have to record, but I also absolutely love this show. Andy Daly is back with an all-new season of Review on Comedy Central. It's one of my favorite new shows in like 5 or 6 years. Andy's character, Forrest McNeil, reviewed some unusual things last year like road rage and eating 45 pancakes and getting divorced. And now he's reviewing more normal stuff like being buried alive. And it's such a great show. He's going to review everything, even if it kills him. You should absolutely, absolutely check this out if you're a fan of comedy. Review with Forrest McNeil. It's Thursdays at 10, 9 Central, and also on the Comedy Central app. Jersey! The song you're hearing is Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run, and if you didn't know that already, then I don't care to know you. We're talking about politics today, and while this song doesn't have anything to do with politics, it does contain the phrase Born to Run. You'll hear it if you listen closely. And being born to run is an attitude that a lot of presidential candidates claim to be, as if they never sought office and instead had the burden of its call thrust upon their reluctant shoulders. God spoke to me and told me to be president, and all that, and so forth. Regular listeners of the podcast can confirm that I love presidents and campaigns and elections and the whole friggin' show. As a result of my obvious fascination with presidents, I get a lot of people emailing and messaging me whenever election season rolls around. Election season, which, it turns out, takes place over the 16 months before an actual election, apparently, now. Most of the questions I get are, as you can imagine, about Donald actual Goblin Trump. He seems to be all over the news right now, and we keep hearing story after story about his seemingly unstoppable rise in the vague and omnipotent polls. The people who write to me have been understandably freaking out. Why is Trump doing so well? What does he even stand for? What does it say about our country that he's doing so well, etc. and so forth? The good news is that he's not, and he doesn't matter, and neither, in fact, does anything that's happening in the campaign right now. So if everyone just wanted to turn off their TVs and do something else with their time for the next 6 months or so, they could, and still have plenty of time to make an informed vote come next election. But it's not just Trump that's getting people crazy, it's the whole political theater show. I wanted to clear the air and address as many campaign and election myths as possible, while hopefully providing context and getting into the why and the how of this ridiculous campaign. Alex Schmidt and Christy Harrison will be joining me today as I again fill in for Jack, who is, let me see the text he just sent me, caught in a bear trap. Sounds exotic. Alex is going to pop in and talk to you a few times in the middle, and then I'll be back to wrap things up at the end with footnotes. Hey, this is Daniel O'Brien. I am joined with my two very best friends in the whole world, Alex Schmidt.
Hey, how's it going?
And Christy Harrison, all the way from, do we say where you're from? Are you allowed to, are people allowed to know that?
Yeah, it's Idaho.
Okay.
I'm in Idaho.
But like, give your actual street address.
Oh yeah, no, don't do that. I don't think anybody cares. I'm not sure that people are listening to this myself, but yeah, it's fine. Don't give the address.
You're not sure that people listen to our podcast?
I'd like to think people are. If you're in your car, say you're listening. Okay.
All right. We'll wait till next Monday. Everybody honk your horns right now.
Right.
And I'll assume every horn that I hear on Monday will be people listening to this podcast furious with Christy.
Yeah. Also, give me the finger if I'm talking right now. If someone else is
on
talking.
It.
Oh, great. There we go.
All right, speaking of talking, today we're going to talk about presidents. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm no stranger to the president beat. I've written books about it, and I've talked about it on this podcast, and I write about it for the site all the time because I love and study presidents. And it's definitely top of mind right now, because if anyone is watching Colbert's new show, that's almost exclusively what he's talking about at the top of his show. Like, his first segment is generally always, here's what's going on in the election right now. And there are debates happening. Everyone seems to be talking about this election, and it's a very strange and weird thing for Alex and I, because I think we are both of the official stance that nothing that's happening right now could possibly matter for the actual election. And it's even weird to call what's going on the election. Like, we put it in quotes because give it 6 months and the field will look wildly different.
I thought this was like your Christmas, actually. I mean, for you, Daniel, I thought this is like the best to be talking about presidents all the time, and they're on TV for you to look at. And I just assumed this was like what you want. I'm surprised that you're so cynical about this process. Isn't it fun for you?
It's fun for me. I love this bizarre parade of candidates. It gets frustrating and tedious to me when I'm getting bombarded with slate think piece after slate think piece about why everyone should be afraid that Donald Trump is going to be the president, or why this bump in the polls, why this recent surge of Ben Carson name awareness means X, when it doesn't mean anything. Like, I would love to watch this the way that people love to watch car accidents where there are no victims, when it's just the crash dummies bumping into things. I like it because I know there's no stakes to it right now. Because I have people messaging me on Tumblr and through the Cracked forums and on Twitter who just seem so upset and so distraught. There are people who are genuinely crestfallen that someone like Donald Trump is leading in polls for the GOP, and like, they're asking, what does this mean for our country? Like, how can I be happy living here if this is true? You think, oh, don't worry about it. It's bullshit. It doesn't matter. He's not going to be president. He's not going to be nominee.
Right.
Everything is fine. Stop freaking everybody out, Slate. I don't know why I'm coming down so hard on Slate.
Well, yeah, they're one of them. They can take it. A lot of it is that I keep forgetting that it is 2015 this year.
Yeah.
When I watch the news, because the election is in 2016, is a fun fact, I think.
Right.
You would forget watching it that, like, we're recording. I looked at, like, a date calculator thing, and when we're recording right now, it's 412 days till the presidential election happens, which is an ocean. That is a long time.
It's so long, and presidential election, it's not like this is a TV season that is going to have, like, a lull over Christmas. You know, we're not going to have a mid-season finale and then pick up the election cycle again in February. We are in it now. Donald Trump announced his candidacy 17 months before the election, which means that's when election season starts and that's when TV coverage starts. And that's just, we're just in this now until we have a new president. And that's so exhausting.
Is that typical, though? Is that, like, because I was looking up the cycle last time and it seems like we're in the same place we were the last time, right? Like, they need this year to sort themselves out, and we need the year as voters to figure out who's who and, you know, sort the riffraff. And I'm not mad that we have a whole year left, because I'm not ready to vote, and I don't think and I don't think I want to make those decisions in a short amount of time. Like, I kind of need the next year to figure out who these people are and who I want to get off the stage.
I think that would be great if they took all of the candidates a year in advance, all the serious candidates 1 year in advance, and they had an hour special each, just be like, here are my stances, here are my platforms, here's my record, here are my recommendations, you can call my references if you want. And then give the voters a year to do their own research, really, instead of this barrage of...
You don't like the debates at all? They don't inform you in any way?
Oh, 100% no. I can't, apart from slightly more recognition of who Dr. Carson was, I don't know what, like, of substance has been said. I get a bead on people's charisma, but if we're looking at both the last two debates for the GOP, by a wide margin, Donald Trump spoke more than anyone else, was named more than anyone else, and had direct questions fired at him more than anyone else. I go to his website. He has a single policy. That is the only thing that he, apart from the vagueness of let's make America great, he has one policy. It is a vague and completely insane idea about immigration reform.
I'm going to it now. What's his policy? I want to know.
It's immigration reform. I'm going to build a wall. I'm going to make the Mexicans pay for it. I'm going to get rid of all of the illegals in the country. And even that, like, the one stance that he has, if you ask him, how are you going to get all of these people who are here illegally, how are you going to get them out of the country? His answer was very safely, I think, or very humanely. Great. That's not a fucking policy, you cheese doodle. What are we going to do with that? And he has gotten more coverage.
He doesn't look like a a cheese doodle.
He's gotten more coverage than anyone and has spoke more of these debates than most of the rest of the party combined, and I still don't know a single thing of substance that he believes in.
Yeah, 538 analyzed, they did a study of just news coverage and Google searches related to the Republican field, and Trump's gotten 50 to 60% of both of those things. He's more than this other, what, a dozen, more than a dozen other candidates.
Yeah, there's 38 people
combined.
Running.
Yeah, all 67 of them. Also, I just love that he's, you know, there are a lot of great reformers who wanted to build walls between countries. That's a classic reform position. Yeah, and there's also, there's a professor named John Sides at George Washington University who argues that by basically the media putting all that attention on a candidate, that will just artificially boost their poll numbers automatically. Right. Like whoever's just at top of mind and getting talked about the most will suddenly rise. In the last election, it sort of happened in cycles with Rick Perry, who's now out of this one, and then it happened with Herman Cain. And then Newt Gingrich was sort of the last guy to get that wave, but it still didn't matter in the end for any of them.
Those are great points. These are the things that I bring up when people seem freaked out about Donald Trump's apparent surge in polls that shows no sign of stopping, is that the people who were in his position 4 years ago were Herman Cain and Michelle Bachmann. These are the people that also had a whole lot of popularity, a whole lot of name recognition. Trump is a little bit better at it than they are. That doesn't mean he's better at campaigning or will be better at being president or a nominee. He will be none of those things. But it's just there is a precedent for clowns making a big splash early on because everyone is Googling them. And the other thing I like to point out is that polls at this point don't necessarily matter because they're typically done among people who are the least informed and the least likely to vote. And this is not judgment on my part. This is statistically what is true. Sorry?
Who are they polling for us to come to this conclusion?
Just,
are they children?
Like, yeah, it's Galoop is... they're just going to middle schools and they're like, who would you vote for?
It is actually an accurate gauge, though, because kids reflect their parents. who they're talking about, but I wonder how people come up with these numbers. Like, I don't know. I don't understand who's going to Trump rallies. I don't know who are in these pictures. It's like almost admirable. I can't be mad at Trump because he's so hilariously good at this. And as far as he's gotten in this joke campaign of his, and still getting a spot on the stage, and still getting all the Google searches, and he's got nothing. Nothing there. It's a movie. We're in a movie.
Yeah, because he is part of a line of sort of troll candidates, I guess is, or at least candidates who do a lot of trolling.
Yeah.
And I think he, in particular, when he said that he was describing John McCain, he was saying basically that POWs are losers because they got caught. Because that's the most refined trolling I've ever seen in my life. Like, obviously, it's a horrible thing to say, but what a job. Like, who's going to top that ever? Like, I was blown away by just everything he was doing. And
what's his end game, though? Like, he's not running for president.
No.
He's not hoping to be a media person. Like, he doesn't want a spot on Fox News, right? Because he's not actually good at talking.
Yeah.
What is he going for?
Someone else who isn't me. I wish I made a mental note to check up on this, but I never did. Do we know how much he is charging to appear at all these campaign rallies? I'd imagine that he can charge.
Wait, you charge to appear
does he
at
charge
campaign?
I don't know if he's at the rallies,
he's
but,
the
I, but
around, right?
Yeah, I mean, like he can essentially even when he drops out of the race, he can charge whatever he wants to speak literally anywhere. I mean, if you're looking for an end game, he is someone who was saying, CNN, if you want me on your debate, $10 million.
Yeah.
Because that's the amount of ratings that I'm going to give you. Like, he's sharp about ratings and playing this game. We've got some data right now. Trump rally tickets going for up to $200 a pair online.
You have to pay to get in.
That gasp is appropriate.
That's
ridiculous.
It's a good show. But see, then I think... Does he want to be an entertainer? I mean, like, it seems like he's moved from pure business to just being on TV and being a personality. That's what he wants.
Yeah, I think he's found that
he just wants to be
being Donald Trump is a very lucrative career path, and it's certainly easier than any of his other jobs at which he failed.
Yeah, it seems like he lost money or kept riding the bankruptcy system in business, but I think in particular being on The Apprentice and The Celebrity Apprentice, and not just being on them, like being part of making them and making the money from them.
Yeah.
Right.
That seems to be his favorite thing to do, and also where he like practiced this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like when I look at Sarah Palin, she tried to be on do a reality TV thing after her run, and she was new at it. She didn't have the practice he has at being in front of us on TV clowning and trolling. She is pretty good at it, but not, you know, not at his level.
He's scary to me because it seems like he's the kind of monster that we all stop ourselves from, that man stops itself from being because we have like human empathy, but he's like, but what if you just take that away? Look what I can do. Look at these crazy things I could say. Someone at one of his rallies brought up, hey, Mr. Trump, I think you're great because I'm terrible also. What are we going to do about these Muslims? We need to get rid of these Muslims. The president is a Muslim. Mm-hmm. And rewind 4 years ago when, or 8 years ago when someone told Senator McCain that Barack Obama was a Muslim. He's like, no, that's not actually accurate. He's an American. You're wrong on several counts on that. Donald Trump's response to, we need to get rid of the Muslims and Barack Obama is a Muslim, was, we're going to look into that. We're going to look into that. We're going to see what we can do about that.
Yeah, although to his credit, that's kind of sort of consistency. Like, he kind of led the birther thing at one point.
That's true.
Like, it's of sort of, I guess that's his second campaign plank,
is
walls and conspiracy theories.
Is that how Trump started? Was the birther thing sort of his toe dipping into the political arena?
He has never officially run for president, but he first floated it in 1988. Mm-hmm. Was the first election where he was like, maybe Donald Trump gets into this. I have a board game. You know, why not?
times were different.
Yeah, it was great.
When
people played board games?
That was the decade for board game magnates to really claim the spotlight.
A few years back, he like essentially threatened Obama with like, I will donate X million dollars to charity if you finally release your birth certificate. And then a couple days later, Obama was like, here is my birth certificate. And then he was still like, we'd better read it closely. Like, he had nothing. But right, it's also not what, I think a few other candidates have said it, and it's partly out of their self-interest, but it seems like it's not what an actual candidate for president does necessarily.
No.
Like questioning the citizenship and origins of the sitting president.
Especially
for your own purposes.
At this point.
Right. At this point, what are you going to do? What are you going to prove? What are you going to find? No, sweet. Hey, we'll be right back to our conversation. Right now, we are listening to What You Don't Do by Leanne LaHavis. She is a singer from Britain who's worked with Prince before. She's worked with Alt-J before. Her second album's just come out. It's called Blood. She's an amazing singer, and I think this song really speaks to the idea of a relationship where you don't need to be someone else, and you don't even need to really overly demonstrate who you are in a super conscious way, because it's just clear to that other person. And it made me think of this because it's the opposite of everything we're talking about. It is the opposite of politics and of, in particular, what Republican candidates have to do right now, because there's so many of them, just a lot of essentially grandstanding to stand out from the pack, which is perfectly understandable, but also can be a real grind on the voter when, like we're saying, it's over 400 days till the election. But anyway, that's this song. Check it out and right back to the conversation real soon. I know what I got and I know where we're going. You don't need to show it. I already know it all. It's what you don't do. It's what you don't say. It's what you don't do. I know you love me. I don't need proof. It's what you don't do. The games you don't play. It's what you don't do. Oh, I know you love me. I don't need proof. Challenge yourself. Challenge yourself to learn something new with a free 10-day trial to lynda.com. Lynda.com is used by millions of people around the world and has over 3,000 courses on topics like web development, photography, visual design, and business, as well as software training like Excel, WordPress, and Photoshop. All of their courses are taught by experts, and new courses are added to the site every week. Whether you want to set new financial goals, find work-life balance, invest in a new hobby, ask your boss for a raise, find a new job, or improve upon your current job skills in 2015, lynda.com has something for everyone. Sign up for your free 10-day trial today by visiting lynda.com slash
Cracked, and you'll get unlimited access to every course on lynda.com. Oh my god, access to view tutorials on tablets and iPhone, plus Android mobile devices. Goodness gracious, access to new courses added every week. Holy crap. Some of the courses and videos I recommend are Getting Things Done, Business Writing Fundamentals, Breaking Out of a Rut, that's a great one, Foundations of Photography, Exposure and Composition. Do something good for yourself in 2015 and sign up for a free 10-day trial to lynda.com by visiting lynda.com/cracked. Go ahead. I challenge you to learn something new in 2015. You have a year to learn something new through Lynda, and then report to me, and we'll talk about it. Building a website can be tough, and even if you do know your way around coding, creating something that looks good and works well is a time-consuming affair. Whether it's for a business site, a portfolio, a restaurant, or whatever else, in this day and age, you probably need one anyway. Well, lucky for us, Squarespace makes it easy to build beautiful websites without breaking a sweat. Squarespace provides simple, powerful, and beautiful websites that look professionally designed, regardless of skill level. No coding required. Not only does Squarespace provide you with intuitive and easy-to-use tools to create your website, Squarespace also has state-of-the-art technology powering your site. And you know you can trust in Squarespace for your website needs when millions of people and some of the most respected brands in the world trust them too. Seriously, you can't beat the ease and simplicity of Squarespace. Squarespace gives you 24/7 online support and a beautiful website for only, are you ready? $8 a month. You can even get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for the year. So what are you waiting for? Start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code CRACKED to get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for the Cracked Podcast. We thank Squarespace for their support of the Cracked Podcast. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
The less we need to show.
The other irritating thing about Trump, apart from the fact that we are talking about him and that all other news networks are, is that he sort of robs the debates of ever possibly having any meaning. Not that debates this far out, not that a debate with 118 or however many candidates there are could have any substance, because there's only 3 hours and everyone's going to just get their talking points in, and that's sort of the game. Even if that weren't the case, he's still robbing it of any substance, because his popularity means that the rest of the candidates can't say, shut the fuck up, you're not actually running for president, because they don't want to alienate his supporters. All these people, this is why you're going to get Kasich or Walker or whomever it was, who was like, you know what, Donald Trump is tapping into some kind of nerve here. He's really hitting on something that is
Kasich,
important.
Yeah, Kasich, I think.
And it's like, that's such a bummer that all the candidates have to, they're so afraid to say, no, he's an idiot. He doesn't have any experience. He's a bad person. He's bankrupt his businesses. He has no actual plans. He doesn't know anything about foreign policy whatsoever, and you can ask him point blank, and most of the time he'll say, if I get the job, I'll know more about it than you will in 24 hours. Like, that's his stance on things. He doesn't know anything now, but if he's president, I'll be the best at it. I'll be 100%. I'll know so much about the Middle East that your head will fucking spin. All the other candidates, an actual doctor has to sit here and be like, yeah, he makes some fine points, because when he drops out of the race, you don't want to be the guy who has alienated his entire support system.
Yeah. Well, and because none of the other guys have like a clear, obvious constituency at this point. Like, Bush probably has the most establishment behind him. But back in January, when it looked like maybe Mitt Romney would three-peat, maybe he would go for it again, Rasmussen did a poll and Romney blew everybody else away. Like, he was by far the leading candidate, just because, partly because for the reasons Trump's the leading candidate now, name recognition and somebody familiar and things like that. But it also spoke a little to none of the candidates being an obvious, oh, this is the non-Trump candidate that we definitely want to go with.
Yeah.
And so they're all in a position of having a hard time being more extreme than him, if that's a way they want to go. I don't know if that any of them would want to. But also,
that's
having
such a dangerous game for one of them to just come out and be like, all right, how am I going to out-crazy this guy? How am I going to even,
well,
all right, get rid of most white people, too?
Well, weirdly,
There's only like 13 people that I like in the country, and I'm going to get rid of the rest of them.
Well, weirdly, there's no way to exactly know his motivations, but when Walker was still running and came out and said, we need to build a wall on the Canadian border. we need to do that is kind of like a what other borders can we wall? Like, right. Like trying to be like out Trump him.
Rubio's going to come out next week and be like, I think we should build a ceiling. Like, just give America a roof so nothing gets in from above either. Right.
Like that dome from The Simpsons movie. Like, just, yeah.
See, if I were running for president, I would like having someone like Trump on the stage with me because I would think it'd make me look good to have him. Like, there's nothing that I can't out-dumb him. I can't say, I mean, like, eventually, you know, he's going to run out and or be out of the race, but I would have looked good in the meantime. But I guess that's not how it's working out, is it? Because people are dropping out before him.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what people thought. They imagined that, like, oh, great, I'll look like a genius compared to Trump, and B, I will look so much more moderate. Like, even established far-right conservatives will never look as extreme as Trump, and it seems like it would be such a gift to the party that, like, look, we're not as crazy as him, right? Stick with us. We're so much better. But it's a monster that has gone out of everyone's control because no one gets a chance to speak or get the kind of attention that he gets because he's so, I don't know, I don't want to say, what's, like, the cancer version of charismatic. I like, because he's not, like, dynamic. He sucks.
Virus? He's like a,
he's a virus. Yeah.
He's infecting the process.
Right. So there's no room to even prove that you're smarter than him or more moderate than he is or a better fit than he is because he is just dominating the entire political theater right now.
Yeah. I can see this, that, like, positive comparison working out for the eventual nominee. Like, whoever is the eventual Republican nominee, part of their narrative will be they defeated Trump. They did, and that'll be great for them. But until then, it's not helping anybody, and nobody can, like, piggyback on it. It's just whoever lucks out and gets the nomination.
At some point, that's going to just sound sad. Like, you beat Trump, good for you. You know, we're feeling awesome. We are proud of you. Give you a little pat on the head. This should not be hard. This should not be a hard thing to do. And
in the meantime, everyone is spending so much money. I don't know how much most people know this, that it is so wildly expensive to run for president, especially now. President Obama set records, I think, the last two elections for the amount of money spent on a campaign. I could be wrong about that. I'm sure someone in the comments will let me know, and I will repent.
Well, I'm pretty sure the last couple races have each topped themselves in general.
Yeah, we're just going to be spending more and more money, an obscene amount of money. To an outsider, will look like not a lot of work. Like, you think, oh yeah, plane tickets to get from state to campaign, but what else could they be doing? All they're doing is, like, wearing a nice suit and talking in front of camera. But there's entire teams, and there's their social team, and, like, their branding people, and all of the strategists and the advisors that they have to have on their staff 17 months before an election. They're all spending so much goddamn money. I mean, that's why Walker said, at least yesterday, that's why Walker said he was out of the race, which I loved as a response. He was like, well, the short answer is money. I don't have any more money.
One of his, like, advisors,
And he was like, well, sure, give up on those dreams then.
Well, and that's... And I think Perry dropped out too because he had stopped paying his employees and then tried to keep it going, and then it was like, well, I guess we have to stop.
Aww.
Because that's it.
I get bored with the money part. Like, I just don't pay attention. I mean, I get bored with this, all of it. I really won't start seriously paying attention for a while. But then I forget, or I don't understand the money thing too, because it's going to play into who I vote for and who I see and all of it. And it's such a boring component that I block it out, but it's to my detriment, because to all of our detriment, because we don't have very many options, and this is who we're left with. I mean, all of them. I'm still half Republican. Like, I used to be a Republican, and I don't even know what I am now. I would love a great Republican candidate to emerge from this field and be not a crazy person, and I don't see that person yet, and it's sad, and I'm waiting, and I do have to watch the debates because I need to find my guy or girl and have someone to vote for, but who knows? I just started getting sad. I'm sorry. I'm just getting depressed.
It benefits the discourse so much to have two strong candidates. Like, I feel like even the past couple elections have had a much better back and forth. Just in terms of both sides having somebody running who could kind of represent sort of like a complete political platform, I think.
Yeah.
Who had something to say about a wide range of things and a lot of time to get some support. And this one so far hasn't gone that direction.
Offers a different perspective, offers a different, you know, policy stances on. I want to see both sides. I want to see a Democrat-liberal side. I want to see the Republican side, and I want to weigh them evenly in my head before I make decisions. And I don't know. Yeah. So my analogy for this whole process is it's like a pregnancy. It's like there's no way to get a baby without somebody going through the pregnancy and suffering through the 9 months of holding a person inside them. And there's not another way to get to the election itself without going through this 500, 600, 700, 800-year cycle that we're stuck in. We just haven't figured out another way to do it. And this point, this part where we've got 30 candidates on a stage and half of them are clowns and the other half are Nazis, we're just disappointing. That's not what I meant. The disappointing thing. It's like this. It's the part where you're throwing up the stuff that's bad for you. So we're like getting, we're knocking out who's bad for the GOP. Get them out. And so I feel like this part is necessary. Like it's important. It's uncomfortable and it's kind of gross, but it's still a part of the process. If we didn't have this moment in the process, then we'd have a weaker election option.
I don't know close to anything about British politics, but they, I know at least anecdotally, they condense their campaign and election cycle to a very, very small, concentrated period of time.
Yeah.
And really?
Yes. And it's not even like we have the day that is voting day where everyone goes and votes and campaigns are allowed to stretch as long before that as they can back in time. In England, they're very strict about like, no, this is the period when we do it. So just like get it all done in however long they do. It's much shorter than ours, and it's very like they're very strict about their time frame. Yeah. I brought this up thinking like the ace in up my sleeve was Alex Schmidt is going to know this better than me, and we'll jump in at any time save me.
Well, also you would think they would have a longer election cycle in Britain because there are more parties. There's like more to figure out. There's Labour and Conservatives and Lib Dems and Greens, and like there's a lot to cover.
Ace up the sleeve always plays.
it's very driven by essentially the parties picking a party leader and then the party getting votes in terms of who becomes their prime minister and things like that. And then also they just had an election for the party leader for Labour and elected a guy named Jeremy Corbyn who's getting compared to Bernie Sanders in a lot of ways. He's a longtime avowed socialist and wants to take Labour in a much more socially democratic direction, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, wants to decrease the military, wants to do things like that. Well, and then also a lot's happening with David Cameron that's just unrelated right now.
Yeah, this is what's news to me because I don't follow British politics because they're only because I chose my path. I buried myself in American politics years ago, and like I'm not gonna feel bad about that. I'm sorry.
How many countries do you have to follow?
Right, come on now. But this is last week to listeners, but yesterday for me, I ran an obsessive pop culture disorder video where I had a piggy bank on my desk because I always have something new on my desk every episode. And so many people in the comments who assumed that I'd written and shot that episode, I guess the morning it ran, they're like, oh, is that pig because of David Cameron? There are a lot of people in the comments like, oh, that pig thing really resonates with your British viewers who are like, oh, David Cameron. Did the prime minister fuck a pig?
Well, so the story in a book coming out about Cameron is that he was in what's called the Piers Gaveston Society, which is an incredibly exclusive drinking club at Oxford. It's like there can only be 16 members at a time, something like that.
Okay.
And apparently
like a terrible club.
It will sound worse real soon because apparently what happened, and also there's a book by a guy named Lord Ashcroft who was a big fundraiser for Cameron, and then also apparently people think he thinks he got screwed out of the position he deserved, like sort of spoil system after the election.
I'm several steps behind you. Lord Ashcroft, is that title or his first name Lord?
He's a teenage singer from New Zealand. So the book claims that basically Cameron put a part of his genitals in the head of a pig, which was in the lap of another member of the Piers Gaveston Society at some kind of initiation event when he was in college.
Real quick, live pig?
No, it's a decapitated head.
Oh.
It's a cut-off head of a pig. So, yeah.
All right, I just
not
want
mess around.
And also Charlie Brooker, who makes Black Mirror, has had to go on Twitter and insist that I had never heard of this when I wrote that episode of Black Mirror. But also, that's the meme, is like Black Mirror is crazy real. Yeah. It's 100% a thing.
I also just like that guy who did Black Mirror. I want whatever the overlap is among people who consume obsessive pop culture sort of and people who listen to this podcast. That's not why I put the pig there. The pig was left over from another sketch, and Tammy, our producer, was like, I think this pig would look cute on your desk. I'm not affiliated with the situation at all.
Right. You also aren't putting the tiger on your desk because something happened in politics.
Right.
But yeah, the British system overall, it's both more and less party driven because voters are kind of picking a party and then the leading party installs the executive. But then also there are more parties and there's more coalitional governments and things like that. It's more of a parliamentary system. So it's sort of strange that we have two parties that everyone knows, but also this election, as much as there are new things to learn about the candidates and how their positions change, like Obama evolved on gay marriage in his case, but we know a lot of the candidates, or at least have come across them before. Mm-hmm. Several of them have already run for president officially, and then almost all the ones who haven't have either been a governor or a senator, which is a very high rank. The only ones who haven't are Carly Fiorina, who lost a Senate race, mm-hmm. but has run for Senate, and then Ben Carson,
Dr. Carson.
Is like the true unknown going into this. Mm-hmm. And then so far, the big things that have come out is that he wants to do a tithing, like a flat tax tithing-based tax system, mm-hmm. and then also he said on the news recently that he'd be uncomfortable with a Muslim president because he just doesn't think that's a fit. And then also the the interviewer asked him after that, like, well, what about a Muslim member of Congress? And his response was, it would really depend on the Muslim. I would need to find out more about them and kind of, you know, who they are and what they believe, things like that.
That's fair.
Yeah, which he was on TV. He said it out loud and everything.
Yeah. Boy.
But everyone else either has a voting record in the Senate, has executive decisions as a governor, or in Hillary, Huckabee, Santorum, Perry, who's out of it, and Biden, who could potentially run, has like actually run a presidential campaign before. And I feel like if you're doing that, you can basically come back and say, yeah, this stuff from before, also these changes because of changes in the world, and then these changes based on what's happened. Hey guys, it's Alex again, and we're listening to another song. This is called Main Street. It's by a band called Deer Tick. It's off their album Divine Providence, which is not the newest, but one before. I just like the song very, very much. It's by their main songwriters, this guy John McCauley, who also has a sort of kind of super group called Middle Brother with Taylor Goldsmith from Dawes and Matt Vasquez from Delta Spirit. So check them out, or Deer Tick if you like this. Song jumped out to me because every election cycle you hear, especially in the debates, but also in speeches, Main Street versus Wall Street is the sort of the shorthand for people versus banks, essentially, but in a less, revolutionary way. And you're going to hear that again and again. And I think this song may, for all I know, be intentionally titled toward that, but it's basically about the average person being a little bit strung out, a little paranoid, a little worn down by the system and everyday life and everything else, but done in a way that I think rocks really hard and is fun. Also, Deer Tick is kind of a democratic band to an extent. They're from Rhode Island, that's not why, but they did their 10th anniversary sort of residency special set of shows at the Brooklyn Bowl around New Year's, and did a series of shows where they covered other bands' albums and also played their first album called War Elephant, which is also great. But the last show on New Year's Eve was a fan-selected show. People got to vote and decide which songs they'd hear from Deer Tick. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's the good kind of fan service that also makes something special. So Main Street, Deer Tick, hope you like it. And we'll be right back to talking.
first season-long fantasy football team may be going strong, mine is not, but you don't have to wait until week 16 to get paid. Put your fantasy skills to the test every week this season at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. With one-week fantasy, there are no season-long commitments. Got an injured player? Like half of my team? No problem. It's like a new season every week, so you're never stuck with the same players, like Dez Bryant and Peyton Manning, who was awful this season. Who saw that coming? And get this, DraftKings is crowning a new millionaire every week this season. That's millionaire. That means that you could turn your love of football into the payday of a lifetime. Just pick your players, pile up the points, and pick up your cash. That's it. Hurry to DraftKings.com right now. Use promo code CRACKED and play for free with your first deposit in this Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest, where first place takes home $100,000. Enter CRACKED for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. I can't write, I can't bleed my soul. Lose one friend and your whole mind finds its
home. Yeah, I guess he's gone. That brings me to one of the things that I'm curious about, and I'd like to know what the rest of the people in the podcast think, because it is my firm, unwavering stance that Donald Trump will not get the nomination, and I'm really sorry, Internet, Bernie Sanders will not get the nomination. And
no,
I...
Walking, slams door, leaves.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do it.
Our sound effects package is just top notch. It even has the sound effect for leaves. So there are two things that happen next. One, after Trump and Sanders don't get the nomination, and after all the other candidates get whittled down to one on either side, we go back to politics and business as usual, where we get Clinton and Bush again, if that's what it's going to be, and we just do more of establishment-backed people with high name recognition who are going to both be essentially moderates anyway. Bush is not going to be so far right, and Clinton is demonstrably not very far left, and we're going to get roughly the same intersection of the Venn diagram of candidates that we always seem to get. Or the less cynical approach to this is that even if we know Sanders and Trump are not going to get the nomination, what they represent and what they brought to the dialogue will actually change politics in some way, or at least clue people into the fact that they are getting the attention they're getting right now because they're striking some kind of nerve. And even though Trump and Bernie Sanders are nothing alike, they're both hitting fairly hard the outsiders factor. They're coming at this as the, I'm not part of the political machine. I am fed up with politics as usual. I'm sick of it. I hate it. I'm not Clinton, who is a politics machine darling for decades now. And I'm not Bush, this political machine dynasty. We are these people who are just as sick of it as you are, American people. And that's why they're getting so much attention right now. And I just wonder if it's going to end up mattering.
Yeah. And I think they both, to an extent, have a valid argument as I'm an outsider, like, because Trump has never held elected office. He's also he's one who hasn't technically run for president, but has tried to threatened three times and also threatened to run for governor of New York twice. But he has never held an office in the party and has also been sandbagged by the entire rest of the party as much as they can, which only seems to help him somehow. And then Sanders is technically an independent. He's running for the Democratic nomination, but he is technically an independent and makes a point of not taking huge donations. Mm-hmm. And so I think a part of both of them drawing so much what an outsider attention is that it's true. But
right,
I don't mean
that they're playing a card. Forgive me if I misspoke earlier. I don't think that either of them are like...
No, I still think Trump's kind of playing a card.
But, sure. I do think there's something genuine to it. I think Trump knows that he'll gain traction with it, but they both do have merit to their claim. And Sanders is a rock star. You see him on Colbert, the excitement that people have for him and the fervor with which the internet will embrace him. They're so happy about Sanders. And the internet doesn't really know anything about anything most of the time, so that's fine. But I haven't seen the internet so unanimously behind a candidate in...
Ron Paul for a while.
Yeah, probably Paul.
Yeah. Love Ron Paul. But I don't understand the outsider appeal. Like, I get it on an ideological level where you're saying, okay, we don't want people who are part of the system. We want someone who's just a regular guy to come in because they're going to do a job that represents the regular people. But that's not true. And if we think about it for like 5 minutes, you know that you want an expert to be in a job that requires a lot of skill, that you can't just walk into the presidency as a doctor and do a good job. You want someone who knows how to be a politician and how to negotiate and has participated in the process for years. Like, you don't want someone who's just walked in off of one elected position. And so this idea of an outsider candidate, I think it hurts because they're not, I mean, maybe they add to the conversation, but they're not real candidates, and if they were, we'd be in trouble.
Well, I think what the success of Trump and Sanders, and I'm putting success in quotes, what their popularity means is that a lot of Americans do want an outsider right now. They don't necessarily want average Joe. I mean, if you're asking me, I want the smartest person in the country to be president all the time. But what people don't want their neighbor to be president. When they're saying an outsider, they don't want a nobody. They don't want Joe the plumber or Joe Sixpack or anything like that. But they're speaking out of frustration for politics as usual. They're speaking out of sort of despair that it seems like it doesn't matter who we've been putting in the White House, and that it's always been, like, people didn't know Mitt Romney before he was guy who runs for president all the time. They didn't know President Obama. They knew him as a junior senator from Illinois who made a great splash at Democratic National Convention in 2004.
Yeah, he was at that point a state senator. Yeah.
Yeah, but these are still, you're watching this parade of candidate after candidate that seems like these dynasty legacy players for their parties, and your average voter is having a hard time seeing what the difference is at this point, because we've been engaged in conflict overseas for more than half of my life, I think.
200 years?
But yeah.
The whole time we've been
there. Yeah. And no one is ever making the amount of money that they think they should make, or they think they need to make to feel comfortable. Right. No one will ever feel as safe as they want. And I think what we're in right now is a lot of people who are very frustrated and sort of sick of being forced to choose between, you know, this dynasty player and that dynasty player. It's like, well, what does it matter? Let me pick one out of 600 per party, instead of just like, all right, it's going to be one of these four old white guys or one of these four old white guys that we've just picked from, you know, wherever.
Or ladies.
Yeah. But it's still, you and I, Christy, are not even doing the nominating. Our power is to watch these debates and talk to senators if we want to. But essentially, the people who donate and the established parties who essentially choose their candidates, they're the ones who are picking who we're allowed to vote for. And I think everyone's getting tired of that. And
are you advocating a revolution? Because I feel like this is where we're going with this conversation. Like, you've got guns and you're putting together an army. Is that what you're going for?
Army implies some kind of like hierarchy and rules. I don't really feel like there's a leader for my militia, is what is our preferred
word. Okay.
We laces sort of up boots, puts on ammo, loads gun. More great sound.
Because this is really depressing. I mean, I feel like we needed someone on the call who's really excited and into this stuff, and none of us are hitting the mark.
Oh, man, that's why we wanted you, Christy.
We are the worst.
We really wanted you in this to be like, I think everything's because you're probably the sweetest person I know. And Christy's the one who's going to say everything's fine because...
I still think it is fine.
Right, everything's fine.
I think it is fine.
Because it's pregnancy.
I do.
And at the end of this term...
Well, I think Hillary's going to win, and she's going to be the most prepared. I don't even know what she believes in at this point. I have no idea. But I think she's going to be... She's been prepping for this for decades, and that's a good thing. You know, she knows her policy. She knows how to work in Washington, and it's a legacy thing, but it's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I do want someone who's an expert at running government to run my government. And I know there's going to be shady stuff on the back end, but I know that because Obama broke our hearts and Bush broke my heart before that, and it's just how it goes. So don't put a dummy in there. Put a smart one, and I think we'll be okay.
If Hillary does end up getting the nomination, because it still looks like, I mean, her support is dwindling, at least if you pay attention to the polls, which you shouldn't. But there's also like just the tenor in the atmosphere. It seems like we're cooling off on Hillary right now amid these non-email scandals that everyone loves to keep talking about. I think there's still a chance that Biden is going to enter the race at the 11 o'clock hour and will get tremendous amount of support. If Hillary does end up getting the nomination, it seems like it's hers to lose at that point. Like, no matter what candidate the GOP puts forward, if you watch that first debate, everyone seems sort of unanimously on board with, I don't want to say defunding Planned Parenthood, because they're not all the ones that are doing that, but there was a whole lot of pro-life talk there, and a whole lot of things that seemed like it was alienating just about half of all voters. A whole lot of stuff that seemed like it was not, you're not catering towards women in the first GOP debate. And no matter who they get, if they're going to get a party with a track record of trying to defund Planned Parenthood and trying to strip away more women's rights and not support them against Hillary Clinton, I mean, you're handing it to her at that point. You must know that your opponent's frontrunner is a woman and will likely be the Democratic Party's candidate. Why are you doing anything at all to further alienate women by not being a woman running against a woman?
But I mean, but like, how much of the electorate can women be? Like 10%? I mean, it doesn't seem like that bad of a strategy.
See, even, and okay, so even the Planned Parenthood stuff, this is really weird, but I don't get mad at Republicans on that, because I feel like if there's a cause you're going to lose your mind on, this is probably a major one that makes sense to me. It's something that they're losing their minds on, but it hits home with that population, and I don't know, I'm still learning about who's what, but I do think it's going to be all the same. You're right. People should be angrier, but I can't get worked up about things.
Well, and yeah, and I think to an extent we really want to be optimistic about the presidential race, and especially the winning candidate. Like, we would all love to have the best president possible, but we also all want somebody who's incredibly prepared, incredibly experienced, not controlled by the establishment, not controlled by a few donors. And also, if the New York Times looked at the Republican field so far, and apparently it's just a few hundred families that have donated more than half of all the money to them. Mm-hmm. In particular, the top two donors, one of them gave almost all of $12.3 million just to Ted Cruz. And then the next one created a super PAC that is just his $10 million donation to Ted Cruz. And so, like,
what a losing bet. Holy well, what were they thinking?
Well, also, and also that when I was looking at that list, it had like $5 million to Scott Walker, and I was like, ah, sorry, buddy. Oh man, that's rough for you. That's money down the drain. I mean, if I was one of those donors, I think I would reasonably expect to be able to tell that candidate what to do. Or ideally, they've just chosen a candidate that agrees with them on everything already. But back to, we want somebody who's completely experienced, completely uncontrolled by the establishment, also like somebody new and exciting and a fresh face all at once, and we want electing them to fix everything, regardless of Congress, the Supreme Court, local government, state government, everything else.
This is going to feel even more depressing. I'm still thinking in the back of my head, like, how to turn this around by the end of the podcast to put a really positive spin on it, but this won't be that.
I've got a lot of funny sound effects.
So, okay, good. Yeah. We keep talking about how now we want, like, an outsider. We want someone new but still experienced and, like, down-to-earth but still very bright, and someone who understands what the average person is going for, because we're sick of these, what we think of as the modern political cycle, where it's just the Koch brothers or apparently the guy who gave $10 million to Cruz. It's just these families and these small organizations that are running these super PACs. We're like, this is what's happening now, and we're sick of it. We want it to be better than this, like it used to be. It was never not this. There have been, as long as there have been elections, there have been party bosses that choose parties and rig elections in some cases, and essentially have been dictating, if not our president, certainly our choices for the entirety of American democracy. Like, I'm trying. Right. I guess Washington
and
didn't have a super PAC, so that was.
No, it's all fine.
So great. All right, so it's all fine.
We're still here, right?
Yeah.
It's not great, but what are you gonna do?
At this point, I wish we were looking at a more exciting election, because as you said before, Christy, this can be Christmas to me, or it can be really boring noise. It can be like watching a movie that you already know the ending to, like the last election, because I've mentioned this on my blog that election season is Black Friday for the media. It's Christmas for them because they get so much coverage. It's one of the only times that having 24-hour news channels makes sense, because then you can get constant coverage on all of these candidates, and it's just such a meal for them because they can get all these people to come in and do their talking points, and then they make ad revenue when they run these shows because people watch them, and they make lots of money. And good, MSNBC and Fox News make lots of money when it's election time. Great. So it behooves them to treat every single election like a horse race, because no one's going to watch their show if it's, yeah, we got 16, 17 candidates right now, but here are the ones that don't have a chance of getting the nominee based on money and lack of support from a strong voting base or the party itself. Here are the candidates that are only running because they hope to get a spot on our network as a talking head next year.
Right.
And here are just the crazy clown candidates that are bored and rich. So that said, here's the one that's going to get it. Here's the one that's going to get it for the other party. Here's the one that's likely going to win unless something drastically changes with the economy, because that's the most important thing, because people vote with their wallets. So you don't need to tune in for the rest of the year, because we already told you what's going to happen, barring some outside catastrophe. No network is going to do that, because then they won't get ad revenue and no one will watch their shows. So they have to treat everything like it's huge. They have to treat Trump like an actual candidate, because then they can point to these polls. Look, you're going to pay attention because Trump is leading, and that's exciting to you either because you're a person who supports him or you're a person who wants to hate watch because you can't even believe this is happening to your country. Look, horse race. Look, Trump. Look, Sanders. He's on fire. Feel the burn. Everybody pay attention to all these things and never stop paying attention until we have a president. The way I felt about the last election, there was not never a chance, but statistically very unlikely that President Obama would not win his second term. And we can choose to remember it like a horse race. That's certainly how the media painted it. But months leading up to the election, me and Nate Silver and like three other guys knew that President Obama was going to win. And we were like, everybody cool. It's already been decided. And it becomes tedious for me then because the media is still treating it like a horse race. Everyone running around in the world is still like, this one's heating up. It's Rocky and Apollo Creed. No, it's not. It's fucking Rocky and that stupid robot that Paulie had. And that's it.
Yeah, well, because you mentioned before that that letter Trump sent to, I think it's Jeff Zucker at CNN before the second debate. Like, I'm giving you all these rates. Like, he was never going to get any money from the guy, but he had a point that his existence has boosted all these news networks tremendously.
Right. If you're Donald Trump and you write to the head of a network like, hey, I can do your debate, or I could just not. There's no law that says that I have to do every debate. That's not like written into the campaign that I need to do that. I could just stay home, or I can come and you can donate $10 million to charity. And like, even the fact that he knows that is an interesting facet to that fucking walnut of a person.
And says it openly. Yeah. And it really is, like, I was, before that second debate, there was a time where I was at the gym and they had a few different TVs, and one of them was on ESPN and one of them was on CNN. And ESPN was running promos for the college football games coming up that weekend, and CNN was running promos for the debate coming up. And they're like cut the same. It's like the same, all these quick cuts of names and action moves by, like, you know, the candidates, the action move is more like turning, you know, but it's still, it really is like, wait till you see this amazing competition on TV that Which, someone will win and someone will lose.
Yeah. Names at this point.
It's Walker.
Walker, I got that one. Jeb.
It's
I was trying to find the good things out of what's good about this specific cycle, and I'm not there yet. I guess the fact that these outsiders are changing the conversation a little bit, but it's not a smart conversation. Like, it's not the smartest version of the election of policy talk at this point. It's really dumbed down and stupid and walls, and it's embarrassing.
Well, Sanders says a whole lot of things that I agree with, but even as I'm watching him on Colbert, and
I'm not paying attention to him yet. I'm not there yet. I have no idea who you're talking about.
he's got some smart points. He self-identifies as a socialist, I believe, but a lot of his points, they speak to the wage gaps and economic inequality that all of us, as like the Americans that I know and interact with every day in my life, the kind of issues that are important to us as far as like, hey, the middle class, as it used to be known, is dissolving, and the same talking points of the wealthiest 1% own just all of the money, and the rest of the 99%, we're like splitting $16 among us. The rest of the 99% of the country, we're just like trading the $16 back and forth, and that's it.
Yeah.
Sanders is talking about, like, hey, I don't think this is a great idea. And he speaks things like student loans and the cost of student loan debt is way too high. All these things that I feel resonate with actual human beings that I see and interact with in my everyday life. And even as I'm watching him on Colbert talk about these things and getting like applause break after applause break, I'm like, yeah, that's right. Ah, buddy, you're not going to win at all. You're not going to get the nominee at all. And I just know it because he doesn't, because you could talk about all those things and then Colbert will say, but you know, you don't have any of the big donors that historically make candidates, and you don't have a super PAC, and you don't have the backing of the party establishment, the party bosses. So right. How do you think you're going to do this? And he's like, the American people is the biggest party boss in the world. Another huge applause break. Ah, buddy.
Oh.
Nope.
Oh, that's
I'm real sorry, man.
Oh, I don't even, like, does he have good foreign policy ideas, or is he just sticking to what he knows right now?
I believe it's mostly kind of drawing down entanglements in other countries is in general his foreign policy, and also maybe cutting some military spending.
Okay. Sorry, I've used this hour for you guys to educate me.
No, that's fine.
So what's this story like? Tell me about Carly.
What I want out of this race, I went off on a tangent before trying to get to this point. But what I wish was happening was that there was a more exciting race. I don't need it to be a neck and neck horse race, but I'm just not like jazzed about anyone right now. I'm sort of in Christie's boat where it's like I'm gonna learn more. I love swinging Joe Biden to death. I think he's great. I think he's phenomenal. I don't know how I feel about him or Hillary being president or anyone from the GOP. I don't know where I'm at yet, obviously. But I still wish they were more of a race. Like I really loved, to a point, McCain and President Obama's race. That years ago was exciting to me because I loved McCain before I even knew who Barack Obama was. I was a fan of John McCain, and he sort of, I think, lost his way, and Sarah Palin was a huge nail in that coffin for me, and I think for a lot of other people. But that was two candidates that I really admired tremendously, and it was a race that seemed very clear. Like, I mean, you can't draw a better cartoon of symbolism to be like, here is old white establishment and here is this new young like dynamic and charming
like
urban
the,
like everything yeah life. Yeah Christy Harrison said urban, Daniel didn't say that. But
that's
this but this youthful element, and he had so much energy and vitality, and it was like, look at these two very clear different sides at this time in America. It was just a really exciting time to be a person who loved elections.
and they both had it felt like it might be nostalgic.
Even I don't want to date me anymore.
Exciting time in America.
Well, it might be nostalgia, but it felt like both of them had things to recommend them in a way that was really great. But I mean, probably at the time I was like, oh, politics has never been more fractured than this. Oh boy. Like, remember Bush and Gore? Oh, that was a calm election.
I forgot that Alex used to smoke and was 50 for a while.
Yeah, I got over it. And also I feel like the race might be more interesting or less tiring if we just got less of it. Like, having debates right now doesn't bug me that much if it was just that, because then it would just be like an hour every couple weeks or month. Well, not an hour, like 3 hours every couple weeks or month they all talk, but it's the wall-to-wall coverage past it, and especially that the way the media has changed naturally and on purpose, it's really set up to only talk about this race at the expense of all other politics that are going on. Pew did a survey and they found that back in 2012, we'd reached a tipping point where the majority of people got their news digitally. Mm-hmm. And also that newspaper readership went from about 50% of people reading papers in 2000 to 29% in 2012. And it's only dropping and dropping and dropping from there. And then also people are getting a lot of their news from social media. With just Facebook, 64% of adults in America use Facebook. And then half of them say they get their news from Facebook, from things either people they know or or news outlets are posting to Facebook. And so since the news is migrating to the internet, and since everybody needs clicks and needs things that people will send to people, they go national and they go big story with more and more of their coverage. Because if you cover Senate races and House races and local stuff and mayors and things like that, not everyone can share that with everyone. And if you cover boring candidates, then you lose to people who are covering Trump.
Sure.
I also think McCain is the one who got us here in this terrible moment where we have these joke candidates, because he brought Sarah Palin to us. And
before John McCain, there was Steve Forbes, and there was Ross Perot. Like, Ross Perot, I don't think...
Oh, it's a different level, though, don't you think? A different level of...
I don't know. Yeah. I find myself thinking often about the late question mark Ross Perot. I'm not really sure if he's alive or not.
When wasn't he independent? He was kind of his own deal.
He was independent, but he was still a total whackball, right? Is he somewhere like that? He's still alive?
85. God bless him.
Good, there you go. Good for you, Mr. Perot. This is showing my age. He was like caricaturized on All That, the sketch show for children.
Yeah.
Like our version of Saturday Night Live.
He was.
It was like the Ross Perot character. And he was already a clown. He was already this weird, silly thing that was like accessible as a joke to a second grader, which is what I think I was when he was running for president.
Am I crazy? Was Amanda Bynes him?
No, it wasn't Amanda Bynes. It was the young gal that preceded Amanda Bynes.
But it was a lady.
It was a lady.
A young girl. Yeah.
We can spend the rest of the time talking about Amanda Bynes because I've got a lot of opinions. I don't know if Sarah Palin gloried in not knowing a lot of policy, and I seem to remember Ross Perot is at least trying, putting some effort into being a serious candidate,
sure.
But I could be misremembering.
I was in second grade and only cared, I would say, 60% about presidential elections as a second grader, but I do seem to recall that he really seemed to want to be president. He was just, like, inherently silly as a human being, but, like, he was the guy who kept buying up television time. He would just like buy hours on all of the networks that existed, just be like, let me just talk at you for a while.
I'm okay with that. I don't mind that.
I wish the election cycle were more like any movie about sports that has ever happened, where we see all the candidates in the beginning and then they go off in training montage until later. I would love it.
Yes.
I want you, first of all, to have to go through something. You have to pass some kind of test or pay some amount of money or get enough signatures or recommendations just to be like, okay, I'm very seriously considering running for president. Just to keep Yahoos out, just these motherfucking chowder heads who want to just come in and declare themselves president in 2020. Kanye, you idiot. You need to go through something that makes you a serious candidate just so the chowder heads don't do it. And then once you do that, it's like, okay.
Yeah, graduation ceremony.
Right.
And
then you just say, here are all the candidates. No more candidates. The wheel is spinning, so we can't have any more candidates. Now you guys, everyone go away for a little while and like train and study and practice being a very good candidate. And then we're going to reconvene in 6 months and we want to have seen growth in you. We want to have seen like, all right, what did you do with your six
America's
months?
America's next top president.
Right.
I went to
the Middle East and I saw what was going on down there. And I talked to the following generals and I talked to these people and I talked to the following experts and I studied this and I learned this about economics and I learned this about healthcare. And like, now that I've spent 6 months to a year really thinking about this, here is what I would seriously do to address the problems. Like, you know, another candidate, I went out and I talked to Americans all across this country and I figured out what was important to them. And based on that, here is what I'm calling my official platform now. And
And then they do their talent.
Yeah.
And they,
tuxedo portion, swimsuit portion.
Historically, and you'd probably be able to speak to it better, but like, I wonder if like a few candidates now, I feel like now and in the past, they speak to like their business experience, like especially Trump or Fiorina.
Ew, yeah.
I ran a business. Obviously, I can run a country. And I feel like...
Yeah, how'd that work for Hoover, you fucking gummy bears?
Well, and then historically in the past, it was the army, right? At least to an extent, some candidates, it would be like, yeah, I won the Mexican War, so I should be president.
That's
and
true.
The country was like, you're right, that's
we
a good
call. We had so many guys that was like, where Grant was like, consider how many people I've murdered. And they're like, yeah, we should put him in charge.
Or like, what, Taylor? Like, Taylor was just a general, and they were like, well, he can run an army pretty effectively. So and
how did that work out for us?
Yeah, Washington, you know, it at times has worked.
I think it's because it was...
It won't work now, though. Things are too complicated.
It doesn't work now.
I won't vote for someone just based on their corporate experience. No way.
No, well, right. I think what we're doing when we pick people who have run businesses or when people run on the strength or success of their business is that we don't really have a place for modern heroes necessarily. Like, that's why we got these soldier presidents, these general presidents, because they were our superstars at the time. Like, Taylor was a name that you knew because there wasn't anything to pay attention to except the war, really.
So you're looking at Trump.
Right. And we had, and we could call them things like war heroes. We gave them badges for their bravery and their strength and their courage and their ability to keep their head on a swivel and to keep their cool all the time and because they were rough and ready. we don't really glorify our soldiers as much anymore, which is a tremendous shame for the soldiers in the military and for what it says about us as a country. We also don't have any equivalent heroes, really. And that's why Fearing will say, look, I ran these businesses. Here's the thing. I don't have a medal or anything, but, like, look at all of the jobs for which I am responsible and look for all of the money for which I am responsible. And it's the same thing as President Obama talking so much about being a community organizer. He doesn't have a business and he doesn't have a war record, but, like, here is the social good that I have done for the world. Or the country, I guess.
Yeah, because when you were describing, like, oh, I wish we had this process to send people away for a thing, I kind of thought of those things. And also almost like Boy Scouting. Mm-hmm. Like, if there were, like, merit badges for doing all the things that make you... And, like, Eagle Scout is kind of one. Like, that's a good thing. And obviously, it's a very complex job with all kinds of aspects to it. So how do you exactly...
Well, I think Hillary's been doing the things that you're talking about, but over two decades. Like, she probably figured out the presidency thing in the mid-90s and said, okay, I need foreign policy. I need da-da-da. I need to learn how to campaign. I need to learn... And she took that montage that we want and spread it out over our lifetimes. And that's why I think she'll win, because she's going to come in with the most prep. But it's not glamorous. It's not...
Right.
It's not, and nobody wants to watch that for 20 years.
I will always, and this will earn some ire of people. I like Hillary Clinton a great deal, but I just, like, as someone who's just trying to step back and observe the political theater, I always worry that she will have that damn intangible likability factor that doesn't seem to work in her favor. People really look for reasons not to like her, or the way that people describe her, and I'm sure at the heart of a lot of this there is sexism, as there's a lot of racism at the heart of people who are like, I can't quite put my finger on why I don't like Barack Obama. There's something about him that I find untrustworthy. There's, I think, a lot of sexism at the heart of people who are just like, I don't know. There's look, I'm not a sexist. I've known women and they're nice, but there's something about Hillary Clinton that to me is like, I don't know. I don't want her in charge of the country.
There's charisma. I mean, that's a fair thing to say. I don't know that that's a sexist thing.
I just have a knee jerk for assuming there's something wrong at the heart of everything. But as much as I will not personally subscribe to the fact that she has no charisma or that she is not likable as a person or qualified as a candidate, I do, as someone who studies elections, knows how important the charisma factor is and knows how Joe Biden will immediately be more likable to a large group of people than Hillary Clinton. It's a thing that you can just observe in the world right now, which doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be the nominee or anything like that, because rewind the clock a few years, Howard Dean used to be a rock star. Howard Dean used to have people going nuts for him until he went pyah and then was gone forever.
I'm so glad you reminded me of that. That made my day. See, this is fun after all. This is all good. This is good.
Yeah. But that's my fear for Hillary Clinton, is that I like her and I like her experience a whole lot, but there's that other factor, the same factor that made everyone so much more likely to support a junior senator from Illinois years ago instead of Hillary Clinton, who, before Barack Obama started making waves, was the clear frontrunner for the Democratic Party.
Right.
Yeah, I think...
the good news is that nobody on the... Chris Christie has some charisma. I kind of like... I was going to say nobody on the Republican side is much more interesting to listen to, but that's not true. I think Chris Christie is...
I think Christie's interesting to listen to. I think I'm a Jersey boy, so I've been paying attention to him for a while, and there are a lot of teachers in my family, and we don't like Christie. Also, he's a motherfucking Cowboys fan and goes to Cowboys games at their goddamn stadium and, like, sits in that box and hugs the owner and then wants to talk to me about Bruce Springsteen. Go fuck yourself.
Right. He lives between two NFC East teams.
I don't know that story. What did he do to teachers?
He just hates them and hates all teachers' unions and wants to dissolve them. And doesn't support teachers. And it's teachers are so wildly underpaid. It's like disgusting how underpaid they are. And I know it's huge in Jersey. And I've seen so many schools in Jersey shut down. And I think teachers deserve the most support that anyone could get. Yeah, because Jersey has one of the best public school systems in the country, but we still can't seem to get support from anyone on them.
And that's not unique in the party. That's kind of what Walker built his a lot, like, unions, and especially teachers' unions, like, taking them on because they're apparently aggressive and dangerous. I don't know.
They're like gangs, like roving gangs. Yeah. Rulers.
Right, they just threaten our children with bad education. They're like, hey, it's a nice kid. Shame if something were to happen to it.
To educate him. With Hillary front running, I think there's one danger of a very long election cycle is, because we talked about there is probably some sexism against her and some perceived or actual lack of charisma with her, but also I think there's just like, if you're the front runner from enough time, you get like blue shelled, you know, like Mario Kart. You just, oh, you're in front. Just, we got to throw everything at them because they're in front. We got to take them down. Like, I think it's happened a little bit to Jeb Bush too, just because he was, to an extent, the front-running candidate because he had establishment support in his last name.
Yeah.
And I think candidates, in particular, if Trump hadn't been such a big thing, would be mostly trying to take him down. And so, if you're Hillary, it's great to be out in front, but then people talk about Benghazi for 3 years.
Yeah.
Or just all of the attacks go in your direction.
Yeah, it could go in either way. I mean, it could be a blue shell where someone shows up at the 11 o'clock hour and is suddenly exciting and new and fresh and like, oh my God, what a breath of fresh air now.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, it's tremendously in her favor that all of this email stuff is happening now, 400 plus days before the election. This isn't going to be an October surprise because it can't be, because we're going to get all of the emails that come out and they're all pretty boring. I don't know how closely everyone is following the emails that get leaked, but there's been nothing that's so disastrous. It's at face level a colossal boner. You should not be making these mistakes in your position. You shouldn't be using a private email server sending the kind of emails that you're sending. Like, you shouldn't even be able to blame that on an aide or throw your hands in the air and be like, I don't really understand technology. That's not my thing. I just did this thing. You're not really in a position where that works as an excuse for me as a voting American.
Right.
But on the other side of that coin, these are really mundane emails. Like, some of these are her asking aides, don't forget to tape The Good Wife for me. Like, these are the emails that we're fucking talking about here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
Well, that just makes me like her more.
That's pretty cool that you like.
I'm with Hillary now.
Because the worst part about it at all is that if any candidate can make any argument that you're going to harm national security in any way, like, and that's a major thing, like, it's important, but but also that's the grabbiest possible thing about it is that, oh, the safety of the country is in danger. Yeah. Like, actually, with Corbyn in the UK getting made the head of the Labour Party, he's for, like, winding down their defense spending and also the nuclear program. And so that's the immediate knock on him is from everyone else, is just to simply say, oh, you'll be less safe. That's it.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say this stack of, what, 20 billion emails?
Yeah.
Like, read all of them and you'll see our countries. And that seems very hard to argue.
Yeah.
In a gut way, and very hard to grab anybody with in like a technical way either.
Yeah. So we're about winding down here. Who do we think is going to run for both parties? Who do we think is going to get the nomination? I still think, because before Trump publicly acknowledged that he didn't get enough attention as a child and never learned the difference between good attention and bad attention, before any of that happened, I mean, we've been saying Bush and Clinton for years, Bush and Clinton 2.0 for a couple of years. Do we still think that's the narrative that we're going to end up with?
I still think Clinton's going to be the nominee and probably going to win overall. And then on the Republican side, I think before Trump, there were sort of, if you had to pick like three people, it was Bush, Rubio, and Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Walker is out now, obviously. But I think for a long time that Rubio is basically like handsomer Hispanic Jeb Bush with and without the name baggage. And he hasn't made any like big mistakes yet that I can think of. Mm-hmm. I think when the dust settles and things kind of clear out, he'll probably be the nominee.
Bush's heart is really in it, and I don't know why it would be. Like, why would you take this job on when you, of all people, should know better? Like, I don't know anything about him, but at this point, I don't know enough about him to, you know, make a real opinion, but it just seems like, good grief, why? Why would you do this to yourself?
I would agree that his heart doesn't seem in it. It was really strange because he's a well-spoken and articulate man who should have handily won every debate.
Yeah,
like either he or Huckabee should have won every debate because of their experience.
Huckabee, really?
Yeah, certainly. Huckabee. But either one of them could have taken these debates, and it seemed like he started, especially at that first debate, he started already knowing that he was going to get the nomination and just seemed like put out that he had to go through with this Mummer's farce. he already knew that the job was his to lose, and like the fact that he had to sit up here with Donald Trump and all these other jabronis was right. insulting to him. But it really shows in his performance and every talk show or news show that he's appeared on. Like especially Colbert was like, "This is that you sound terrible on this show." He made such a poor showing on what could have been a cakewalk of an appearance.
Family tradition, and he doesn't have a choice. Like they just
because I mean, every Christmas and Thanksgiving, both of the Georges will make all these inside jokes about being president. And they're like, "Oh, Jeb, I'm so sorry, I forgot. Yeah. You don't even know about the secret room,
right?
Forgive us.
You must have former governor jokes that are really good, probably. I don't know. I mean.
Yeah, we're just gonna keep talking about the 9 different kinds of meat that are only available to presidents.
My favorite thing in the world with Jeb is that when he was on Colbert, his slogan since before he was running for president, not a slogan really, but like his logo and signs, it's Jeb with an exclamation point.
Jeb!
Just, Jeb! and Colbert asked him about it and kept saying it like, Jeb! And Colbert kept asking like, no, seriously, like, why the exclamation point? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And Jeb very earnestly, but also very boringly was just like, "It connotes excitement."
Right, the most robotic.
Which is amazing.
It lacks all self-awareness.
What a... It's like,
well, it, when read or delivered by voice in a room with air in it, so sound travels, it elicits joy in both listener and speaker that I think represents my general oeuvre.
Yeah, and I don't want politics to be like, oh, whoever's the most excited gets to do it. Like, it shouldn't be a circus, but it should be like, you should be job interview level excited.
Yeah.
You should be like, yeah, I'd really like to do this gig. I would do a really good job of it. And he's not there. It's amazing.
I thought it was a very damning thing for him that maybe I'm wrong in this because no one else covered it in any way. But Colbert asked him like the softest of softball questions, which is just like, sitting here across from me at this table, why do you want to be president? I know I want my job because I like to make jokes and I like talking to people and I like the applause of doing this.
Yeah.
Why do you want to be president? That is not the time for a talking point. That is not the time to say, the government's broken and we need someone to fix it. That is like when you were a little kid, like people look at firemen and they want to be firemen or baseball player. This is your time to say, I am a human being and I have wants and needs and joys and aspirations. And like, this has been a dream of mine because God spoke to me and greatness was thrust upon me. And I'm like George Washington or Cincinnatus before him. I am the reluctant public servant.
You are making your campaign speech.
But he didn't say any of those. He just immediately was like, the government is spending too much money and we need to do this. Like he was immediately on the campaign trail. I'm like, no, this is like a very easy humanizing moment for you where you can like make yourself the protagonist in your narrative that needs to and has to end with you being president, and you didn't do that. And I just thought, well, that's, you're fucking blowing it, guy. You can't even answer the question, why do you want to be president? And it should be the easiest question in the world.
Yeah, it is even beyond what I said before, like about the job interview level thing. It is one of the few times in life where you can very naturally say, I think God wants me to do that. Yeah. Candidates do that. It's great. Really good.
Yeah.
And he
God
didn't
has
find
spoken,
that at
God
all.
God has spoken to so many candidates.
Like Walker's concession speech. He's like, I think God wants me to clear the field for a non-Trump candidate. Great. That's standard. That is not unusual in American politics. You can go for it. But he just didn't come up with it.
Christy, who do you think is going to be the...
I'm going to go with... okay, so Alex, you said Bush, Clinton?
No, Clinton Rubio, said, I think.
Alex said Clinton
Okay,
Rubio.
That one. That one. That's mine, too. I want his. Okay. So edit that out and...
Okay, yeah, I'll make sure that Alex didn't say it. I'm going to still... I'm going to point to the back seats and call my shot, and it's a risk, but I still think it's going to be Biden. I think it will be...
I don't think he's
going to
run.
I think he's going to run. I think he's going to announce at a very well-timed moment where Hillary could look bad, whether it's the release of the emails or right before the Iowa... No, not that close to February. But within the next month, I can see Biden declaring.
I mean, I think he will declare if something like worse than just sort of people not being that into Hillary happens to Hillary. Not knowing the man, I get the sense that he's going to run if he thinks he's definitely going to win. Like, he can start a campaign and be known immediately. He has no groundwork to lay. It's just a question of whether he wants to really risk it. I think he's just biding his time.
Biding his time.
But that's my prediction. Biden Bush. Calling
Biden
it
Biden Bush. I don't know. Well, that's no good. That's not what I want.
Yeah. But he could. Biden could win if he, especially if he picks his spot right.
Mm-hmm. I think he's still mourning his kid. I don't think he's going to run.
Yeah, I don't know. That's definitely part of it, I think. Yeah.
All right. Well, just final thoughts from anyone that will hopefully be not as depressing as the bulk of this podcast has been.
You can go do something else for like at least a few months. I think you can not worry about the 2016 election until 2016 at the earliest.
Oh yeah, that's the
I think that's really exciting.
Is that you? I'm going to, like Art Spiegelman before me, obsess over the news and watch every second of it and turn it to a crazy, weird shut-in. But you don't have to do that. You can just live your life, and you can check back in February for the Iowa caucus and see what's going on then. Like, what's happening? Not a caucus, right? Primary?
We should have a caucus. Party caucus. When Trump drops out. Like, we should make it a thing and have a get-together and celebrate. Because, I mean, that'll be the next time I want to pay attention is when Trump's out, and then I'm back on board.
All right. Yeah, that's it for me. Thanks for doing this, Christy.
Thank you for including me. Yeah, I want to be on more of these because I like to talk to people. so always remember me in Idaho.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars. Look at me, hands in the air like it's good to be alive. And I'm a famous rapper even when the paths are all crookedy.
Hey, it's Footnotes. This podcast got so much darker and more depressing than we expected, but I still want to stress that nothing matters. Not in a God is a construct of man sort of way, but in a nothing happening right now in the campaign should scare or exhaust you. Donald Trump has no shot of being president. I cannot stress this enough. He's an ignorant, showboating clown with a face made of scrotal meat, and he was born without a butt. That's a true story. He doesn't have a butt. This song is called No Handlebars by Flobots. To me, the song has always been about a person distinguishing him or herself with a few small tricks, gaining popularity, and then eventually reaching a position where his or her power was going completely unchecked, and the dangers that follow. It makes me think about our worst presidents, and also I really like this song. Thanks again for sticking with us on a longer, sadder, and aggressively political episode. You won't be hearing from me again for a while, as Jack will return from his around-the-world hot air balloon trip in time to record our next podcast, which will be in 2 weeks. Also, make sure you all vote when it comes time to vote. All right, bye.
I can lead a nation with a microphone, with a microphone, with a microphone. And I can split the atoms of a molecule, of a molecule, of a molecule. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out 1,000,000 vaccinations, let them all die from exasperation, have them all healed from their lacerations, or have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them, and I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope. Telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust. I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars. No handlebars.
Today's episode was brought to you by Lynda.com. If you want to be a better photographer, they've got classes on how to do that. If you want to make your website better, you can learn how at Lynda.com, whether it's learning how to code or how to do graphic design. No matter what you're looking for, they've probably got a course on it. So go to Lynda.com/cracked today. That's LYNDA.com/cracked for a 10-day free trial.
Hello, I'm Emily Foster.
And I'm Deanna Raphael, and we are the hosts of OMFG, the podcast that helps you get hip to what the youths are up to.
And helps you get chill AF. Am I using that right?
We're VHL, Emily. You know, but right now we are actually here for a very eye-opening episode we just released. Very exciting.
Lizzie Velasquez was born with an inability to gain weight. After being labeled the ugliest woman in the world on YouTube, she did a TED Talk on the epidemic of online bullying.
Now she's fighting for Congress to pass an anti-bullying bill, and starting this week, you can see her incredible documentary, A Brave Heart. We are obsessed with her. We talked to her, and here's a little piece of what she had to say.
Every time I see a bad comment or someone says something, it doesn't really, I mean, there are times it will upset me. I mean, I'm human. But at the same time, there are times where I see it and I think I really do still have a job to do. There are still people that are needing help or needing to see that there is a different outlet for your anger.
To hear more, listen to Lizzie Velasquez, A Brave Heart on OMFG.
And keep listening to OMFG on Wolfpop for more interviews with some amazing young people. You can listen on iTunes, Howl, or your favorite podcasting app.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.